Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, June 21st, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Police Continue Search for Leads in Triple Homicide, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Police continued Wednesday to search for clues in Monday's triple homicide on Riley Drive on Bloomington's east side. We are putting all of our resources into this investigation, working with other agencies and working every angle, said Bloomington Police Department spokesman Elias Mendiola. Police were called to 311 Riley Drive at 2:43 p.m. Monday for a report of a gunshot victim. Three men, Corey D. Jackson and Nathaniel A. Pena, both 22, and Juan C. Perez Macedo, 33, were pronounced dead at the scene. A four-year-old boy, who relatives have identified as Pena's son, was injured. Police said he remains in stable condition at a Peoria hospital with a gunshot wound. Our hearts go out to that four-year-old boy who was shot, Mendiola said. That hit a lot of us hard, and we really feel for the family. It's one of the reasons we are working so hard to get this solved. There were no new breaks in the case Wednesday, he added. We are continuing to ask people to come forward with any information, he said. We are working on leads, but know there is some frustration from the public because we haven't shared much with them on this investigation. But we have to protect the integrity of the active investigation, and we can only give the public so much information so we don't jeopardize anything. Mendiola said the department is taking advantage of all available agencies, including state and federal organizations, when possible, to help solve the crime. The McLean County State's Attorney's Office also is part of the active investigation. But our number one priority is public safety, and that is always a concern, he said. That is the core of our mission, is to make sure the public is safe. Mendiola said the department also is working with members of local community groups and with church leaders. A lot of us are also active in these communities and have been there for a long time, building a rapport with them, he said. You watch them grow up from being in diapers to young adults. So we know people, and we want to solve cases as much as anybody. A vigil was held Tuesday night for the victims of the shooting. GoFundMe sites have been established for the families of Jackson and Perez Macedo. Anyone with information on the homicides is asked to contact Bloomington Police Detective Tim Power at 309-434-2579 or tpower@cityblm.org. Detective Brad Melton at 309-434-2537 or bmelton@cityblm.org or Detective Steve Moreland at 309-434-2359 or smoreland@cityblm.org. If you want to remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of suspects, you may be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000. The next story is headlined, Widmer Put Focus on Heartland's Core Mission, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. By his calculations, Heartland Community College President Rob Widmer has attended more than 400 board meetings during his administrative career at Heartland and elsewhere. That's one thing I don't think I'll miss, Widmer said Tuesday night at his final board meeting as president. He retires at the end of the month after more than 20 years at Heartland, the last five as its leader. During that time, he's seen the college grow from a relatively small facility in a shopping plaza to one with its own campus, satellite sites in Pontiac and Lincoln, and accredited student enrollment of more than 5,000, with 16 degree programs and 34 certificate programs. I've been fortunate to be in a position to lead an organization that has exceptionally talented people, said Widmer. I tried to stay out of their way and let them accomplish what they could accomplish. Board Chairman Greg Chadwick said Widmer is always concerned about making sure everybody has a role, that people are heard, that people participate. The board has awarded Widmer with President Emeritus status and named the campus quad after him. Widmer's work with others extended beyond the campus to partnerships with other higher education institutions, K-12 school districts, the town of Normal, and the community at large. "It's all about building relationships," said Widmer. "The keys," he said, "are looking for creative solutions for both parties and always being open to exploring opportunities, evaluating risks, and finding mutual interests." Those joint efforts have included the Challenger Learning Center, the Corn Crib Stadium, and the Illinois Army National Guard Readiness Center, all part of the HCC campus. The college also had developed a robust dual credit program, allowing students to earn college credit while still in high school. "One of the things that Rob focused on is being a resource for the community," said Chadwick, who has served on the board for 16 years and worked with all three of its presidents. Retired Normal City Manager Mark Peterson described Widmer as an approachable, affable leader and an active participant in the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Council. "He is a class act. He is a professional and always has the community interest at heart," said Peterson. Bloomington District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley said Widmer met with him every year, asking what the district needed from Heartland. "He always came to us, which says a lot about who he is," said Riley. Peterson said, "Rob's fingerprints are everywhere on this campus. First as Vice President of Business Services, then as President, Widmer oversaw the building of the campus on Rob Road. The excitement of planning the physical structures is among his fondest memories of his time at Heartland," he said. "That goes hand in hand with the growing student population and growing presence across the community." "Rob is going to be remembered for bringing focus to the campus on the core mission of the college," said Chadwick. "He's done a good job of reminding all of us, the board, faculty, staff, and community, since his first day as president, that the core mission is promoting student success, being a good steward of the taxpayers' money, and being a resource to the community." Although Widmer's financial background was not a key consideration when the board named him president, Chadwick said, it turned out to be critical for the college to get through the lack of a state budget and other financial challenges. Widmer said, "Those 2 years without a state budget were the most challenging budget years we faced, trying to plan in a situation of total uncertainty." At his final board meeting, Widmer took time to thank those he's worked with, including Heartland's first president, John Astroth, who was a particular mentor to me, especially in the position I am now. Widmer intends to remain in the Bloomington Normal area and stay involved, but first, I'm looking forward to a little bit of downtime. That includes spending time with his children and grandchildren, who all live within a 2-hour drive. Widmer thinks his successor, Keith Corneal, Executive Vice President, Chief Student Services Officer at Madison Area Technical College in Wisconsin, will bring some great insights to Heartland. His advice to Corneal is to listen well and recognize the quality of the faculty, staff, and administration, all top-notch. The next story is entitled, "Decision to Close Clinton Walmart, Not an Easy One," by Kevin Barlow. Clinton. Walmart officials announced plans Wednesday to close its smallest Illinois retail store in Clinton on July 20th, a move that is a devastating blow to the DeWitt County community, said a city official. "It's a huge loss of sales tax. It's about 70 jobs, I understand, and you can't just replace that," said City Finance Commissioner Tom Edmonds. The 35,000-square-foot store opened in spring 1983 as the anchor of a West Side shopping center across from the Clinton High School. The decision to close our Clinton store is not an easy one, but financial performance was one of the factors, said Walmart Director of Communications Ann Hatfield. We opened this store in 1983, and we are as proud today as we've ever been with how the store leadership and associates have served and contributed to the local community over the years. We are grateful to the customers who have given us the privilege of serving them in Clinton. Plans for the building are unknown at this time. They said the store, as it sits, is too small compared to their current models, Edmonds said. They don't sell enough groceries. Pharmacy representatives will begin working with clients to transition them to other pharmacies of their choice. Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau Executive Director Marion Brizard said she, like all city officials, was shocked by the news. This will affect a lot of households through the loss of jobs and revenue for the city, she said. Brizard also sits on the board of the DeWitt County Development Council, and DCDC officials are trying to find more answers. We have reached out to Walmart and the city of Clinton to see if there is anything we can still do to change it, she said. In a statement released by the city Wednesday afternoon, officials called the news of the closure heavy and unexpected. This will be a sorely missed long-term business relationship that hits our community very hard. Our prayers and hearts are with the employees that will have to make tough decisions in the days ahead. We will proceed to move forward to find another long-term economic development prospect to fit our community, as we are losing a true asset, read the statement. Hatfield said employees will be the company's top priority in the next few months. Employees will be paid through August 31st, she said. Transfer opportunities to other stores may be possible, and severance packages may be available to eligible employees who do not transfer, she added. We hope they will continue working with Walmart, and we will work with them to find out what their interests are. We'll help them in whatever way we can, she said. Clinton residents said they also were surprised by the news. I'm not an expert, but think it's likely to hurt low-income families and our elderly the most, as well as the folks who don't leave Clinton daily and depend on lower-cost prescriptions and quick access to basic necessities, said Christian Jackson. Lee Peacock agreed the closing will have a lot of implications for the local economy, but he hopes the displaced workers will start their own businesses. And long-term, we could have a great bunch of small businesses in a small town with local employees, local owners, and local customers, he said. To some degree, the local Clinton businesses have done what most other towns cannot do. That's compete and beat Walmart. Amber Sperling said she worries about her friends who work at Walmart losing their jobs and about the closure's ripple effect. I also think that in the long run, it could possibly affect some of the restaurants and fast food businesses in town, because if people are going out of town to shop now, they most likely will eat out of town, Sperling said. I'm hoping I'm wrong on this. Here's a story entitled, McLean County Recycling Rate Hits Record High, by Derek Bay. Normal. McLean County's recycling rate hit a record high in 2017, and officials hope that record won't stand for long. The county recycled 88,459 tons of waste versus 211,230 produced last year, a 41.9% rate that breaks 2016's record high of 40.8%. Officials sought for nearly a decade to hit 40% of waste recycled and now hope to reach 50% as part of a new countywide solid waste plan. We're glad to see it has maintained above 40%. We've been working so hard for years to hit that, and now we've maintained it and grown a little, said Michael Brown, executive director at the Ecology Action Center in Normal. That's the right direction we need to be headed, steadily growing. Recycling has become a higher priority for the county as the McLean County landfill in Bloomington draws closer to closing. Once that happens, local waste will need to be shipped to other landfills, including one in Pontiac, though that's not expected to be more expensive in the short term. We're still probably a few months out, August or September, where the landfill is going to reach capacity. That will be imperceptible to local residents, said Brown. There's no crisis, but we're thinking bigger picture. We want to be more assertive about these waste management strategies because we don't know what the future holds. The plan suggests exceeding 80% of waste recycled by 2038, which proved controversial because it suggested municipalities consider forcing businesses and multifamily landlords to offer recycling services. Normal will discuss its multifamily ordinance at a public meeting Thursday and hopes to pass it in July for an August 2019 implementation. We're starting to draft an education and outreach strategy that would go along with that plan for Normal, said Brown, of how EAC is helping with that ordinance, which it also helped develop. If we want this to be effective, there needs to be very deliberate and effective communication efforts. The plan also recommends new policies and facilities for recycling, construction, and demolition waste, joint recycling contracts for apartments or businesses that are physically close to each other, and a public drop-off facility for residential food waste composting. Brown said the center hopes to soon start a feasibility study of a permanent household hazardous waste facility in the county, another recommendation, and could take a proposal to hire professional help to the county board's land use committee in July. The actual final cost is going to be related to the scope, and we're looking at a fairly broad scope, said Brown of the study. The really big questions are funding strategies. We know right now there is no additional funding available for solid waste efforts. Here's a story entitled, Hacienda Leon Now Open in Bloomington, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Martin Leon has a problem on his hands with the Monday opening of his new restaurant, Hacienda Leon, in East Bloomington. It's been really, really busy, but that is a good problem to have, he told the Pantograph on Wednesday. He and Juan Carlos Leon and Roberto Leon are the principal owners of the restaurant at 407 North Hershey Road. The Leons also have 15 Mexican restaurants in Illinois and Kentucky that go by the names of Los Charros and El Mazatlan, said Martin Leon. This is our first one in Bloomington. We think it is a great city, said Martin Leon, who also is the general manager for the Leons' new Bloomington restaurant and the El Mazatlan restaurant and grill in Lincoln. We are trying to do something different than other places around here, he added. For example, the atmosphere is unique with most of the decorations, light fixtures, and paintings from Mexico. Even its menu cover was designed in Mexico. We designed this restaurant to be an authentic Mexican restaurant, he said. We call it Hacienda Leon because it looks like an old Mexican farmhouse. It took 6 months of renovating the site of the former Ming's Buffet, Asia, Amravati Indian Royal Cuisine restaurant to create the distinctive and spacious family dining style space that seats up to 260 people. The restaurant employs 30 people. The food also is authentically Mexican. We have our own family recipes, so that is why I think it will be a little bit different from other places, said Martin Leon. We have tacos al pastor, and everybody loves those. They use their family recipes to infuse traditional menu items like burritos, tamales, enchiladas, and fajitas with influences from the Leon's homeland in the Mexican state of Jalisco. The menu also includes vegetarian combos, steaks, chicken and pork items, along with typical American cuisine like cheeseburgers and French fries. Lunch meals range from $6.99 to $9.50. Dinners range from $8.99 to $17.99. The restaurant is open from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Sunday. "Come and give us a try. Enjoy the atmosphere," said Martin Leon. "I think we've done a good job of remodeling." The next story is entitled, "B-Champ, formerly of Bloomington Normal, stays busy," by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Karthik Nemani has to cut short his visit to Bloomington Normal to return to Dallas to give a motivational speech at a spelling bee in Texas. Such is the life of a Scripps National Spelling Bee champion. Until a couple of years ago, the 14-year-old lived in the Twin Cities, attending Grove Elementary School, then Chittix Junior High School, from 2006 to late 2016. He took part not only in spelling bees, but also math counts and team quest competitions. Then his parents' jobs at State Farm took the family to Texas. They live in McKinney, a suburb of Dallas. But Karthik, who first started spelling words with refrigerator magnets when he was 2, held on to his dream to compete in the National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. He did more than compete. He won the competition on May 31st, correctly spelling koinonia, a word meaning Christian fellowship or communion. Karthik said he didn't get nervous at the televised event. "I just focused on my word," he said Wednesday during his visit, during which he was honored by the McLean County India Association. If he didn't know a word he was asked to spell, he tried to figure it out by recognizing patterns, he explained. Sailaja Lanka, Associate Vice President, said, "It's an honor and privilege to have him in town." Since winning, he's been interviewed on television and radio and by newspaper reporters. Karthik said the National Spelling Bee was a pretty good experience overall. He liked the competition and making new friends. "I studied pretty hard. There was also a luck factor in the competition," he said in an interview at the Pantograph. His parents, Krishna and Sarita, have always encouraged him, he said, adding, "They pushed me, but not too much. I studied on my own." That study included typing words on a spreadsheet and using online study tools. Karthik enjoys it, he said, because it's cool learning new words and different languages. He encourages others, such as his brother Rishi, who will be entering fourth grade, to keep going and practice, work hard and get better at it. Although he is done with spelling bees, Karthik plans to continue to participate in educational competitions and tennis. He is interested in a career in a STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, and said he will probably attend an Ivy League school. For that, the $40,000 in cash and other prizes he won at the Bee will no doubt come in handy. The next story is entitled, "Church Honors Past, Looks to Future," by Derek Bay. Normal. After 150 years, First Presbyterian Church remains dedicated to serving the Twin Cities and determined to find new and better ways to do it. "Our church is not a sacred space for Sundays only. We're a community resource to use when you don't have a home," said Barb Lemon, chair of the Normal Church's 150th Anniversary Task Force. "We're always looking to do more." That message is at the core of First Presbyterian's anniversary celebration, themed "Honoring the Past, Embracing the Future," that climaxes this weekend with a community open house from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday and a special worship service at 10 a.m. Sunday, both at the 2000 East College Avenue building. "We've invited former staff and pastors back, and several are coming. I'm looking forward to hearing what they've been doing. It's really quite a celebration," said Pastor Larry Gaylord. "It will show this is a loving, Christ-centered congregation still committed to education, preaching of the word, sacred music, and missions locally and around the world." The church has about 500 members who participate in weekly worship and Bible study, family, children's, and youth ministry, 5 separate musical groups, and mission trips and sponsorship of missionaries abroad. They also raise money for charity and open the church to outside groups. Those offerings have expanded over the years from the church's first permanent home at Cherry and Linden Streets, circa 1871, to the East College Avenue building, first occupied in 1995. First Presbyterian has since expanded the building, including with an outdoor meditative space called the Labyrinth, and last year burned its mortgage to celebrate financial freedom. You walk a circular pattern that's kind of a maze in which you meditate as you walk prayerfully and seek direction from God. "Anyone who wanders on the property is welcome," said Gaylord of the Labyrinth with a laugh. "Our property committee is doing great work." Gaylord said he's also proud of the church's history in social justice, including hosting refugee families from East Germany and Vietnam, Pastor Richard Watts's work for civil rights, sharing their building with Korean Presbyterian Church for more than a decade, and paying to build a new church in Brazil. Those details and more are included in a 3-page timeline and 15 pages of supporting materials exploring the church's history, assembled by church members, including historian Sandra Harmon. Members have also made shirts and Christmas tree ornaments to mark the occasion. "We have a very capable and talented congregation that bring many gifts," said Gaylord. "As God has sustained the church through all the years, we trust God to lead the church into the future." And here's a story about another church celebrating an anniversary entitled "Eminence Church to Celebrate 180th Year" by Pantograph Staff. Atlanta. Logan County's oldest church is celebrating its 180th birthday with special events on Sunday. The religious service at Eminence Christian Church, 1605 2500th Street in Atlanta, will begin at 10 a.m., followed by an all-church potluck at noon. A social hour will follow. The church, and now Fellowship Hall, are the fourth building of the congregation, which formed as Sugar Creek Church about 1.5 miles from the present site. The original parishioners' families hailed from Kentucky and Tennessee by way of Virginia. Unaccustomed to the flat, swampy prairie land, they chose higher ground, the Eminence, as an appropriate place to build their homes. Several of the families established the congregation in 1838, with 113 people signing the founding documents on June 24, 1838. The first building was erected later that year near Eminence Cemetery at a cost of $1,000. Church histories record that in 1853, a number of members of Sugar Creek Church organized a new congregation called Bethel Church that still stands east of Emden. A second, larger Eminence Church was constructed in 1856 at a cost of $1,600. A third, even larger building, erected in 1891 for $3,000, had a furnace baptistry and could hold 600 people, but it burned 10 years later. The fourth church, still used today, was dedicated on April 13, 1902. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for June 21st. Please stay tuned.